why don't kick back and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beefs,
spazzles,
to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are having a wonderful week so far. You know, I was thinking to myself the other day, it kind of sucks that I guess the show is on a Thursday because I'm always hoping that you guys have had a wonderful week so far, but I don't really get to get into like what happened the weekend prior. And a lot of times that's where the real juice takes place. But either way, I do want to give a couple of, I guess, updates on what I did this past weekend. I really tried to do very little on the weekend. Well, very little in terms of social engagement. I try to stay home and work on my passion projects, I guess. But every now and again, I need to make appearances and I need to go out because you guys, my friends, are doing amazing things and I have to support you. So this past weekend, Saturday was actually very eventful. Sunday, not so much. Saturday morning, before I went to church, because I go to church on Saturdays, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist, I actually took my son to this mentorship program that's out of, stems out of Brownsville, Brooklyn. A colleague of mine, Kenneth Montgomery, who was actually on the show a couple of weeks ago, is part of this collective that basically, I guess, runs this mentorship program for boys or young children in Brownsville, Brooklyn. And so my son has, you know, he needs some mentorship in his life and he needs to be around other kids, you know, as well. And so I thought, you know what, let me try and let me bring him to this program. And I was very, very impressed. In fact, I didn't plan on even staying, to be very honest, but I did. And I was so intrigued and I was all up in like the lesson planning. So, I mean, I'm bringing my son there, but I feel like I will probably be an active participant myself. I was really, really impressed. And I was so like, I was just so enthralled with what I was learning. So shout out to this mentorship program. I don't know if it's part of the Brooklyn Combine, but I'm going to get the information more concretely and I will present it properly the next time. But it popped in my head and I wanted to definitely talk about that experience. And then in the evening, my girl Farrah Naomi Lewis, who is running for New York City Council of the 45th District here in Brooklyn. So that's Flatbush, that's Midwood, Marine Park. I can't remember the rest of the areas, but she's running for, she's a candidate for New York City Council for the 45th District. And so her kickoff fundraiser took place this past Saturday at Caribbean Social right there on Church Avenue. No, Flatbush. Flatbush and then Church Avenue is like where you get off the train. I'm like so discombobulated this morning. I'm always thinking Church Avenue because like that's where I would get off and then turn and walk on Flatbush. But either way, it's on Flatbush, Caribbean Social. Very good restaurant, actually. I've been there several times and they have a beautiful event space if you guys are interested in doing events there or fundraisers. But either way, I was so blown away by the amount of people who actually came out to support Farrah. Not that I doubted that they would, but it's always beautiful to see people leave their homes, come out and support, you know, one another. And especially, you know, with Farrah, this is going to be a very interesting race. I already see it. But she's the most qualified, and it's not, I mean, it's my opinion, yes, but I've actually worked with her on projects dating back to like 2008. So she's been working in the community. She's been the voice of the people. She, you know, was the deputy chief of staff of Jemani Williams, which is the council member of the 45th district. So she knows exactly what the people of the 45th district need. So to me, there's no comparison. There's no other choice. And you guys are going to hear me talk a lot more about her. And we're going to have her actually come on the show at some point during this race to talk about, you know, what her platforms are, you know, and to give a little more insight as to who she actually is. But it was an honor for me to even be there to be able to support because she's helped me so much in my professional and my personal life. And it's like my turn now to kind of pay it forward and to pay back. So that was my highlight. That and the mentorship program was my weekend event. So It was eventful. I wasn't, you know, in the club or anything like that or doing anything crazy, but that's what I call eventful. When you get older, when you're in your 30s, that's what eventful means. So that's that. But either way, it is time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Popping on fleek, you lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word of the week is ugly hot. Ugly hot is a person who is in no way, shape, or form conventionally attractive, but everything they do, how they talk, how they walk, and how they move is incredibly hot, that it makes them somewhat better looking. It's still centered on physicality, but is more about how they use their body, body language, than their ugly faces. Ooh, Jesus. Okay. coined for my former high school chemistry teacher are often tall, gangly, and interesting men like Chris Martin from Coldplay. Okay. Example. Oh, look at that gangly, odd-looking, very hot, strutting guy over there. Responds, he's not hot, he's ugly hot. The other person, I guess, responds back, yeah, and ugly hots are incredibly rare, so I totally do him. All right, so I find this example to be very interesting because I can attest that there are ugly hots out here. Now, I know there are some of you people out here that are saying that, listen, nobody is ugly. None of God's children is ugly. Everyone is beautiful in their own way. Yes, I hear you. I hear you on that. However, I mean, listen, if you're ugly, you're ugly. I mean, I don't know. I'm probably going to get stoned for this, but there are people who are just not that attractive. But I, again, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? I might not find you to be that attractive, but somebody else might think that you're like a dime piece. And I say the same thing about myself. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. Do I believe that I'm beautiful? Hell yes, I believe I'm beautiful. I mean, if I don't say that I'm beautiful, who else will? I don't know. But I am pretty sure that there are individuals out there who might not find me the most attractive, and I really don't care. It doesn't affect me as much. But this term ugly hot, I mean, it's, I understand where it's coming from. There have been guys in the past that I have talked to that my friends have been like, where the hell did you get this from? Like, what is going on here? Why? Like, this guy is ugly. He is not attractive whatsoever. But I am an individual who kind of looks more to the personality and the heart. I'm an intellectual, people. I am. And so if you are an intellectual male, you will likely get me, even if you don't look like a Denzel Washington or an Idris. I forgot his last name. How the hell did I forget his last name? But y'all know who I'm talking about. Idris. Idris Elba. Yes. So, you know, the ugly hot thing. I have talked to several men in the past that would be categorized as ugly. Generally, like universal ugly men. But they were hot to me because they were just so intellectual. They were so caring. They were so nice. They were so whatever. So I'm not saying to go out here and start calling people out and saying that they're ugly hot. But what I am saying is that this phrase is, you know, it didn't come from nowhere. There is some truth to this phrase. And I know that if you guys would look deep in your hearts, you would agree with me. And you would know that Rita is telling the truth. You understand me. You might not want to agree with me out loud, but inside, I know that we're here. So that is the word or phrase of the week. So you guys know this is my favorite portion of this show. It is time for the big up of the week.
Watch it. When you feel big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up.
So this week's big up of the week is very, very, very special to me. Why? Because the big up of the week is my very own blood cousin. Because I know there are people out here who call everybody cousin, but she is actually my blood cousin, Dr. Natalia Sineas. So Natalia, some people have, people are calling her whatever nowadays, but her name is Natalia. Has always been like an inspiration to me. She's always been a go-getter. I mean, my family is full of amazing people. So it's, you know, my family's amazing, period. But Natalia has always been like this go-getter. She's always been an inspiration to all of the younger cousins because she like actually shows like when you put hard work into something, like if you are focused and you are determined, good things will happen. And Natalia has been climbing up the, I don't know, not food chain, but climbing up the ladder in the medical world for like the last like 10 years. It's like she keeps getting promoted. It's to the point where some of my friends who've had the pleasure and the, I guess, the honor of working with her, because I get texts all the time whenever Natalia gets promoted, they text me and they're just like, your cousin is amazing. Like what else won't she do? Like where else won't she go? So basically this past week, I think it was, yeah, last week, she was promoted to another very, very, very prestigious promotion or position, rather. So Natalia Sineas, Dr. Natalia Sineas, was appointed chief nurse executive for the NYC Health and Hospitals. So this is a very, 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 very prestigious role. And I mean, I'm pretty sure it's highly coveted. It's very competitive. But Natalia was appointed this position. And basically, NYC Health and Hospitals is one of the nation's, or is the nation's largest public healthcare system, serving more than 1 million New Yorkers. And they announced last week, the board of directors, they appointed Natalia Sineas, who has all these letters after her name, DNP, RN, MS, as senior vice president and chief nurse executive. So basically, as chief nurse executive, she will lead initiatives to support patient-centered care and ensure patient satisfaction as the public health system embarks on its comprehensive multi-year redesign to build a competitive, sustainable organization that will continue to offer high quality and accessible health care to the people of New York City. Now, I mean, this is amazing, right? Natalia definitely deserves it. She's been a board certified nurse leader for more than 15 years in healthcare administration. She most recently served as the senior director of nursing and deputy chief nursing officer at Mount Sinai St. Luke's. She began her career at Columbia University Medical Center, New York Presbyterian Hospital, where she served in a variety of roles, including neurosurgical intensive care unit as a quality management specialist for the cardiothoracic department care of neurosurgery and the neurosurgical intensive care unit. Now, the list goes on, and you know, I don't have enough time to talk about all of the amazing positions that Natalia has held, but I mean, this is absolutely amazing. We are absolutely proud of you, Nat. And I don't even know what the next position is, but I'm pretty sure in the next year or two, you will have, you know, risen to that level. So congratulations to you. Big up to you. And only love, success, and prosperity for the future. So after coming off of that high, you guys know that there is always a low, unfortunately, in these streets. Now, this low affects so many people, and it affects me personally, and I take exception to this. Those of us who have our professional degrees, who have went through school and have obtained what some would consider to be what student loan debt, student loans, we've amassed high levels, high amounts of student loans in order to get to where we are today. Many of us who started off working in the government sector, who are currently working in the government sector, did so because of the promise of student loan forgiveness, right? So what that really translates to is I went to law school. I did not go to law school to be poor, right? I went to law school to elevate myself and my family. Therefore, going to law school, unfortunately, you know, I did not get a full scholarship to go to Fordham University School of Law, and I don't know many people who actually did. We went to law school, I obtained my degree, but that came at a cost, right? But I went in, I started off going into public interest law, and I'm kind of still in the public interest realm because I represent labor employees. But I started off working at the Kings County District Attorney's Office, which means I was getting paid nothing. I was getting paid crumbs. People think that lawyers make money. I am here to tell you, not every lawyer makes money. These government attorneys who are out here fighting the real fight are making like $50,000, $60,000, people. Now, if you've amassed $200,000 worth of loans and more, $50,000 a year, first of all, you're barely making it in New York City, let alone paying back these loans. But the student loan forgiveness program kind of gave an incentive for attorneys who otherwise would not or could not, afford working as public servants. It gave them this incentive, like, listen, after 10 years, whatever you have remaining in terms of your loans, we will pay it back. Well, apparently, the Trump administration is not having it. Specifically, you have DeVos, who wants to cut the budget funding for student loan forgiveness again. It's like they're not letting this go. It's like, hello, you tried. It didn't work. Now you're back to it again. And I find it very, very offensive and very, very interesting that in the midst of this, this scandal that recently popped out as of yesterday, that is flashing all over social media with all of these celebrities, business people, all of these high ranking officials who have been in, you know, some sort of like a school admissions ring scandal, some sort of fiasco. You have these celebrities who were paying upwards to millions of dollars to falsify records to get their children into Ivy League schools. You have all of that going on right now, but yet the students who actually went, who were qualified, got into these institutions, paid or obtained student loans in order to get their education the legitimate way. You want to sit here and cut budgets for people who are out here in the trenches working with the population, like working with the people. You got people putting their lives up every day working with criminals or defending those who have been accused. Individuals working to help, you know, senior citizens, those who do not have money for, you know, high-powered attorneys. Like, you have people, you know, working with the regular population for crumbs, for pennies. And you want to cut the student loan forgiveness program that everybody has been looking forward to? Like, people are staying in public interest realms for 10 years, a full decade. They are foregoing and saying no to high-paying corporate jobs so that they can work with the people in hopes that one day their loans will be forgiven. And you want to take that away. Like, if that's not if she's not the womp womp of this week, I really don't know. Actually, let me not say that. There's a lot of womp womps this week. But for me, I take personal offense to the fact that DeVos is back at it again, trying to cut student loans. It makes no sense. Either way, that's the womp womp of the week. So up next, guys, we have my very special guest who goes by the name of Melissa Bernier, who is an attorney who's going to come on and talk about trademarking, business law, and more. So tune in. All right, everyone. I'm here with the lovely Melissa Bernier. Melissa, say hello.
Hi, everybody.
How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Sunday.
It's a beautiful Sunday, though. Even though it's winter,
Sunday.
It's kind of nice outside. It's,
yes.
You know, it's not too bad.
It is. It wasn't so bad. So I'm grateful for the sunlight, because if I had to do with another like dark and stormy day, I think I would go crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hate to burst your bubble, but it's supposed to snow tonight, so.
Ooh, is it going to be a snow that will allow transportation to be shut down, schools to be shut down?
No. It's
damn.
Not that good of a snow.
I'm like itching for that type of snow. Like, I want a reason to say, listen, I live in deep Brooklyn. I am not coming to work today.
I hear that.
Oh, man. Well, I'm really happy that you're here today. I know it's been, you know, with our schedules, it's been kind of crazy trying to, like, lock you down, Melissa B.
Thank you for having me.
No, of course.
I'm so excited to be here.
I've been itching. I'm like, I want to have her on the show lawyer to lawyer, eagle. And I see what you're doing on Instagram, and I see what you're doing in real life. So I want to kind of, you know, get you on the show, talk about who you are, really talk about, you know, you owning your own business as a Black woman. woman, Haitian woman at that. And so just we'll get into the show. So tell us who you are and, you know, what do you do?
All right, cool. So I am Melissa Bernier. I am the principal and managing attorney of Bernier Legal LLC. It's a boutique entertainment business and fashion law firm here in New York City. Let's see. Is there anything else you'd like to know? Everyone always asks me that question, and that's like the tagline that I give. And then I'm like, is there something else that I should say?
Well, let's see here. Okay, so how long have you been operating Melissa Bernier LLC, Law Office LLC?
It has been. So I started in 2010. So we're going on, it's been 8 years. This year we'll make 9 years.
All right, cool. Mm-hmm. So I'm always interested in asking my fellow lawyers, you know, what got you into the practice of law?
Okay. So I wanted to be a lawyer since I was 4, and I wanted to be an entertainment lawyer since I was 10. Mm. So I always tell people I was designed for this. Like, I was built for this.
Okay.
It's my purpose. It's what was put on my heart at 4 years old. So I just, it's like you're given the path and you kind of just have to follow it. So that's exactly.
I identify.
Yeah.
My revelation came at the age of 8.
Oh, but, okay.
You know, so I get it. Because, you know, sometimes people are like, how do you know that young?
Mm-hmm. And exactly. I'm like, you don't know. You just know. Like, I didn't know what a lawyer did at 4 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that time, I wanted to wear a suit, carry a briefcase, make lots of money. I do like none of those things, right? But it's just something, it just stuck with me. It was just like lawyer, lawyer, lawyer. And then, you know, in high school, I started taking any electives I could take were law or politics mm-hmm. related. I was a poli sci major in college. Like I've worked in law firms since high school. So it's always been like my career path.
Okay. So now you said entertainment law. What about entertainment law, like, you know, struck you?
Again, it's the purpose. I remember exactly where I was and who I was talking to when I heard entertainment law. It was a friend of mine whose uncle was an entertainment lawyer, and she was describing, we were 10 at the time, and she was describing what he did, and something just like clicked, and I was like, entertainment law, so there we go. So, and I was musically inclined when I was younger. So
oh,
I played the piano.
Okay.
I played the clarinet. I was a band geek.
I did a clarinet too. I was a band geek.
I know. I think it's a Haitian girl thing. Like, at one point, all of us had like a flute or clarinet or something. But yeah, I played piano and clarinet, and I wrote music. Both of my parents are entrepreneurs. My mom is a fashion designer. So I've always been around like creativity and stuff like that. So it was sort of just a natural fit.
Okay, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, so where did you go to law school?
I went to Hofstra.
And so from there, did you go, you didn't go straight into your own business, but like what did you do when you left law school?
So I graduated in 2008, and that's when like everything fell apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
America.
When I started, yeah.
Yeah. So the recession just hit. There were like no jobs to be had. I was interviewing for jobs that were paying less. So I took 2 years off between college and law school.
Okay.
I worked as a paralegal. And I was, when I got out of law school, I was interviewing for jobs that paid less than I was being paid as a paralegal.
Oh, wow.
It was crazy. So I have a family friend who is a solo practitioner. She has her own practice. And she was like, come and work for me. It was for free. Like, when I say free, I mean free, free.
Free 99.
Exactly. And I worked with her for 6 months. And it really sort of opened my eyes to, because I feel like in law school, they sort of push that you have to work at a firm.
Mm-hmm.
Very few, there are some schools they push, you know, government work also, but it's sort of you're groomed to be a cog in this like really big wheel.
Yeah.
And working with her was seeing the other side of it, seeing how you sort of craft your own career and your own business and how you like are directly affecting people. So she did personal injury and immigration. I hated personal injury, but immigration was cool. Mm-hmm. And just being able to help people in such a direct way was nice. And, but at that point, I still hadn't thought about having my own practice.
Mm-hmm.
It was just something to get experience. Like, at the same time, I was a volunteer family court attorney.
Okay.
I was doing some work with that and just trying to get as much experience as I could. But I actually started getting clients before I started my practice.
Okay.
So, again, I've always been in entertainment. I've worked for, you know, The Source when I was younger.
Oh, cool.
I worked with a great PR firm, so I was always had my foot in the industry. And, you know, I always held myself out as
mm-hmm.
that kind of person. And I just had people start coming to me, hey, I'm a DJ, I have this contract, can you look it over for me? And once I worked with that person, they told someone else, and before you knew it, everyone's like, oh, she does entertainment law. And I'm like, I do? All right, yeah, I do, that's cool. So let's go. So that's kind of how it started.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And so how did you
get to the point where you were like, I'm going to start my own practice? Because a lot of us who are in the legal world, you know, we kind of have these aspirations of starting our own thing, or we have family members and friends who are like, when are you going to start your own practice? But there's always so much to weigh. I know it's not an easy decision. It's not an easy thing. So how did you arrive at that point where you're like, I think I'm going to start my own thing?
To be honest, I literally just woke up one day and I was like, I think it's time. I started having clients and I was like, okay, maybe I should put a name to what I'm doing because I'm already doing it. I might as well just make it official. So that's just what I did. I mean, and in hindsight, like the person I am now as a person, as a lawyer, is very different than when I first started. Mm-hmm. I feel like when I first started, I was like, so just like, gung-ho, like, let's just do it. And yeah. Now I'm like, no, I need to do X, Y, Z. This has to be in place. This has to be in place. And it was not like that when I started. Not to say that I did it haphazardly, mm-hmm. but I was just, let's just go. Like, taking that leap of faith, whereas now I'd be like, I have to do, like, 20 million things before I can put my name on something and say, you know, mm-hmm. this is my practice. But
okay. Yeah. And so with your practice, I know you said you did like fashion law, it's entertainment law. Mm-hmm. So what would you say is, I guess, the most prevalent part of your business?
So I do entertainment, fashion, and business. And I always say that business is like the foundation of all of those. Mm-hmm. Because even as an artist, there are certain business structures and setups that you need in order to carry out your career successfully. So the majority of what I do is business, but that touches upon fashion, it touches upon intellectual property, mm-hmm. it touches upon entertainment. So business. To answer your question.
Okay. And so you said intellectual property. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people, I guess the lay people, don't really realize that intellectual property deals with trademarking, patents, and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. So when you throw out that term, people are like, we don't know what that means, but I need a trademark though.
Yes. Trademark is one of those buzzwords mm-hmm. right now. Everyone's like, especially in this age where everyone is an entrepreneur, yeah. which is great. Like, I love to see that, where everyone is sort of just taking control of their own destiny in a sense. And mm-hmm. they're like, you know what? I'm just going to strike it out on my own, which is great. And so everyone's like, I need to trademark. But a lot of times people confuse a trademark and a copyright mm-hmm. or a trademark and a patent, or they just don't know what it is at all. So it's a very specific term that deals with a very specific thing.
So can we talk about that a little bit?
Of course.
Only because, as you know, in our community here in Brooklyn, being Haitian, everybody's starting a business. Everybody's starting a business. And it's great. Like you said, I love that everybody has like this idea that, you know what, the 9-to-5 might not just be it. Mm-hmm. I might need to have something, you know, to myself. But I find that people are like, I hear it all the time. Do you know how to trademark? Do you know what a trademark is? I think I need a trade. I never hear anybody say anything about copyright or patent. It's really rare that I hear that. Mm-hmm. Everything is trademark. And I think just maybe some information as to like what exactly it is. And when should somebody actually go into the process of trademarking?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me give a brief overview of what intellectual property is generally.
Okay.
So intellectual property is the property of your creativity. It's the property of your mind. Just like there's actual property, like real estate, like you can buy an apartment building, like mm-hmm. the one we're looking at across the street. You have products of your mind that you create that you can use in the same way. So there's more than three types, but to keep it simple, I'm going to give you the three basic types that most people know about. So we have copyright, we have patent, and we have trademark. Okay, so let me start with the one that I don't do, mm-hmm. but that doesn't necessarily apply to most people, but it can. So for patents, patent basically protects inventions. And there's two types. There's a utility patent and a design patent. And basically what the difference between those two is, if you have something that you've created that's completely brand new, that's one, mm-hmm. or you're using something that's already in existence in a new and novel way. So it's like you're reinventing something.
Okay.
And that's what patents protect. Patents are it's very science-based because you have to basically give a drawing of what it is mm-hmm. and explain the components. So there are actually, as an attorney, as you know, there are people that take the patent bar
yeah.
that just practice patents because they're super specific. But that's one type of intellectual property. Now, trademark is the one that's the hot buzzer mm-hmm. that everyone talks about now. And basically, the whole point of trademark is to differentiate your product or service from someone else's. You can have, you may want to buy a handbag, right? You can either buy it at Walmart or you can buy it at Gucci. I mean, you might not want to buy it at Gucci because everything that's going on with Gucci
right now.
Stay
away from Gucci, guys.
Yeah. That was a bad example. Let me say Louis Vuitton.
Louis Vuitton. For now, Louis Vuitton is safe. This week.
So basically the Walmart logo helps you know that any product that you're buying from this particular huge store is from Walmart. Whereas the LV that's printed on almost all of Louis Vuitton's products denotes that it comes from Louis Vuitton and it's of a certain quality and if it's of a certain, you know, caliber. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what trademark does. It differentiates your product or service from someone else's. Now, copyright, the last one I'm going to talk about, is all about, okay, so when you have an idea and you put it in a tangible medium, so that could be a song, it could be a poem, it could be a book, it could be a film, it could be a music video, any of those creative things, ideas that are original that you fix in a tangible medium, meaning that you can touch it, you can feel it, that's what copyright protects. So copyright, CC. Mm-hmm. Copyright protects creativity.
Okay.
So those are the three main intellectual property categories or three types. But to go back to trademark to your question, so like I said, it's all about differentiating your brand from someone else's. And how do you do that? It's more than just a logo. It's more than just a name. Mm-hmm. It's all about the quality of what you're putting out there also. Because, again, trademark is from the view of the consumer. If I'm a consumer, how do I know that your bag is different from this person's bag? Mm-hmm. What makes it different? And if I can't tell the difference, then you can't have a trademark in that thing.
Ah.
Right? So, you know, we both have iPhones. Sorry, I'm in such a phone.
It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, they can't see this, but for you.
For me, for my visual purpose.
Exactly. If I can, I mean, they're both iPhones, but let's say this was not an iPhone, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say it was a Samsung or something. They look very similar, right? If I were, without them being on, if I were to, you know, look at these like this, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference. Mm-hmm. So being that this is Apple, if Apple's phone looked very similar or even identical to Samsung, Apple would not be able to get like a trademark in the logo or whatever you put on this. You understand? So it's all about how the consumer perceives your brand.
Okay. So now with that, I think that's a really great explanation as to what, you know, the trademarking does. Now, with all of these people starting their own businesses, at what point would one need to, I guess, go, you know, start trademarking their name or their logo?
So that's one of the questions. That's one of the most popular questions that people ask me because they're like, I have this idea. I have this name for this product or this product line, or I have this really great logo that I want to start using on my products or in connection with my services. But I don't want anyone to take it. I don't want anyone to copy it. So I want to protect it. And I tell them, well, while you can, and I'll get to that in a second as to how, the whole point of trademark, like I said, going back, is that it's all in the eyes of the consumer. The consumer has to identify what your product or service is. Mm-hmm. If you haven't started using it, the consumer can't identify it because they don't know it. Mm-hmm. So in order to, now this is talking about just if you are applying for a trademark.
Yeah. Meaning
that you're filling out a trademark application with the United States Patent and Trademark Office, and you're submitting that in order to be put on the federal registry. Unless you actually use the word, the phrase, the slogan, the logo, whatever you're looking to trademark, unless you actually use it in commerce, and by in commerce, that means that you're transacting business. It's not just your advertising, you're actually transacting business, then you cannot apply for the trademark. Mm. So I always tell people you have to use it before you can get the protection.
Ah, and that's good to know because I think a lot of people think that they have to lock it down, like you said, lock the name down, lock the logo down, because they are afraid that if they start, you know, posting or revealing, hey, coming soon, that somebody will steal it. But that is a good point that if you're not using it, because the application is not very cheap depending on what is it you're trying to do.
Exactly, exactly. But there is an alternative where you can sort of like reserve the right to use it. Mm-hmm. And that's called an intent to use application. So basically, you haven't used it yet. You intend to use it, but it's more expensive because now you've added an extra step mm-hmm. to the process. And you have to provide evidence that you actually intend to use it. So you can't just sit on it and then, you know, apply for an intent to use application mm-hmm. and then not do anything. Like, you have to actually take steps and show the USPTO that you intend to use it. Mm-hmm. Then once you're using it, now you have to apply for it. So yeah. it's actually a second step that's very expensive. So I always tell people, you know, if you're that concerned about someone using it, and this is going to segue into another part, but once you actually start using it, okay? So if you've ever seen my logo, it's a B and an L with a little star that comes out of it. If I were to start using it, which I have, in connection with legal services, mm-hmm. I automatically was called common law trademark rights in it. So as soon as I use it, I have rights in it. So if someone else were to use that or a similar looking logo in connection with legal services, I could sue them.
Okay.
It's a very circumstantial case because you have to prove that, you know, you have to prove your case, essentially. It's not like you have the actual, you know, certificate from the USPTO that says I own this trademark. Mm-hmm. But you can still sue them. You still have rights in what you use. Okay. So at that point, you have to be pretty vigilant because if you're putting it out there and you haven't trademarked it yet, you need to make sure that, you know, you're enforcing your rights if someone else is infringing on them.
Okay.
But otherwise, you can just use it, and there's no set amount of time. I mean, a lot of people ask that as well. They're like, well, how long do I have to use it before I can actually apply for the trademark? Mm-hmm. You could be using it for a week and you apply for the trademark. There's no set amount of time for that.
Okay. So now one thing I wanted to ask, though, it's like, so let's say you trademark for jackets, right? But then you're like, huh, I kind of want to do t-shirts too, like after the fact. You know, you've already did the application for jackets, so you're certified, I guess, for jackets. Mm-hmm. So you're like, but I want to do t-shirts. And you start making t-shirts with your logo or with your name. What happens in that scenario?
So whenever you apply for a trademark, it's category specific. And there are, I believe, 45 categories mm-hmm. from which you can choose. So if you started out doing jackets, right? Well, in your example, jackets and t-shirts can
maybe
fall
in the same
category.
So let's say jackets and leather bags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because okay. leather yes. is a separate category. Very good. I like that. Yes. So if I applied for the category for jackets, which would be apparel, I would only be covered for jackets. In order to be covered for leather bags, I'd have to file a second trademark application for the leather bag category.
Mm. Now, that's if you want to be covered now, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily prevent you from selling the leather bag. It's just that somebody might come out and use your and maybe apply for the trademark, your trademark name for the leather bag.
Exactly.
I see, mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Well, guys, you see, this is good information. Because I feel like these are questions that people, you know, always have. Like, you know, yeah. well, I only have money to do this, but I also mm-hmm. want to do t-shirts. Can I do pens and t-shirts? Am mm-hmm. I gonna? So it's like, I think the real issue is, or the real thing to consider is, you know, is the covering part. Like, what am I covered for? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're okay not being covered, you know, then I guess you're fine, right?
Yeah, exactly. But what I like to do with my clients is I like to do, basically, it goes on lines of business development, but also your intellectual property plan. Mm-hmm. So you may start out with a particular, let's say, line of clothing that you want to do now, but maybe in a couple of months, now you see that maybe there's an ancillary service that you can provide along with that. Mm-hmm. How does that work into your overall intellectual property plan? And most importantly, how does that work into your budget? Mm-hmm. Because these things have to be budgeted for, because you want to make sure that you're able to take advantage of opportunities when they come. Mm-hmm. And you also want to be able to be aware of pitfalls if they show up. Because ultimately, what I've seen happen sometimes is, okay, you get a trademark in this one particular category with one particular name or logo, right? And now your business is expanding. You've either changed your logo, you've added another product line or whatever, but the name that you choose for that is already taken by somebody else mm-hmm. and you've already started selling. So now not only can you probably not get the trademark, but you also might have an infringement case on your hands. So how do you plan for that? How do you avoid that? That all goes into, you know, planning that. So while it's great, like, again, I love to see entrepreneurs. I love to see everyone doing their own thing. Like, the country is definitely taking a move mm-hmm. towards that. But it's all, it also requires a certain amount of preparation that sometimes people overlook, especially on the legal side. So these kind of things are really important to discuss and sort of map out at the outset, because you don't want to run into a problem that you could have avoided if you just did the planning yeah. to begin with.
And I think that's very key, because I did have a conversation with somebody, like maybe it was like maybe a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. and they were just like, I have this idea. I have this name. Somebody else kind of has a name that's exactly like it, but just a little, but a not exactly, but slightly different. And then when he told me the name, I'm like, the two names sound alike. It's just like three letters like that are different at the ending. And so for me, I'm already seeing that you both do the same thing. And then he's like, well, I kind of do it on a digital scale, and this other person in another state does it on like a local scale. I'm like, but do you know anything about their business? Like, are they expanded? Have they already expanded? You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, you might not want to grab that name. It's so and it's the same industry. It's just mm-hmm. one does digital mm-hmm. and one does it like manual. But it's the same exact industry. And I'm like,
the same thing.
I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you might want to, I'm like, since you haven't done anything yet, you might want to change the name. That mm-hmm. is, you know, my recommendation.
And that's a good recommendation. I had a case that was similar to that. And it was someone who's like, well, I don't have a brick and mortar. I just sell on the internet. Mm. And this person only has a store. And I'm like, but y'all sell the same thing.
Yeah.
Under the same name. And the USPTO is not going to say, well, he only sells digitally and this person sells out of a brick and mortar.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't work
yeah.
that way.
Yeah. And then the brick and mortar, I mean, it's so easy to just throw up a Shopify, you know, shop. They might decide next year exactly. in 2 months that they want to just put it online as well, too. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think these are things that a lot of people don't really consider. They just think, oh, I can just go out and do it. And mm-hmm. it's a lot more involved than
it
people
is.
Think it is.
It is. And that actually segues into a good point that I always like to make to entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. At the outset, you need what I call a dream team. And that's a lawyer, an accountant, and a PR person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those three people or those three groups of people are very critical, not only in developing your business, but expanding your business. Because what I see now, and again, what I love to see is, I know that when I started my business, entrepreneurship wasn't nearly as popular as it is now. And luckily for me, I've seen a lot of businesses grow from that time as well. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of like new level, new devil. Like, there's new challenges that you face. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those come with expansion. Like, how does that... So if I expand my business to a new product line, how does that affect me tax-wise?
Yeah.
If I'm looking to open an office in another state or someplace else, how does that affect me tax-wise? Can I do that legally?
Mm-hmm.
I want to put this on a t-shirt that I've been selling. How does that hurt or harm my trademark? Can I actually do this? Like, there's a lot of questions that I understand as a business owner, it's all about expansion. It's all about getting that bottom line mm-hmm. nice and tight and nice and good and securing the bag, right? But there's so much more that goes into it. And a lot of times, entrepreneurs wear 80 million hats, which I get, especially as Haitians. Mm-hmm. Like, we've got the Superman complex.
Yep.
It's like, oh, I do my own books and I do my own contracts. And, yep. you know, I'm making the thing in the back and I deliver it. You know, like, that's just how we're ingrained, which is great. But you also have a lot of blind spots that you can't necessarily see.
Mm-hmm.
So your dream team is, you know, integral with respect to seeing those and helping you overcome those.
And I think that's really good to understand, because I think most people don't really go, like, their dream team is like their friends, right? Their group chat friends or the people around them. And they're like, you know, guys, what do you think? What do you think? Mm-hmm. Or the internet, you know, mm-hmm. as great as the internet is, it can also lead to a lot of issues. Because if you don't understand, like, the background behind, you know, what the internet is explaining to you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think definitely having an attorney, a lot of times people think they could skimp on that. Mm-hmm. They think they can skimp on the attorney. Like, I don't need an attorney to review this contract. I don't need an attorney because I got this contract off of, I don't know, contracts.com, and we're okay. Because mm-hmm. there are a lot of those online contract business development
where they give you
websites.
Like a, yeah, they give you like a
packet. The templates,
and it's like, oh, just use these. And it's like, okay. Like, I'm not saying they're necessarily bad. They're just not the whole picture.
It's not. And I think that, I mean, depending on your budget, because you said budgeting is really important, that might be where you are at the time. But for me, I always think about, like, you know, the future, what's ahead.
Well, so, you're like, a lawyer, so, of course.
So, like, this is great now, but, you know, what if something happens, though? Like, mm-hmm. what if a clause in this is a little, you know, is not tailored to what I'm doing in
exactly.
particular?
Or you don't understand what's really in it.
Yeah.
And then you're signing away rights, you're signing away things that you shouldn't. I mean, it's great what you just said, like, budget-wise, it's like, that's where I'm at now. Mm-hmm. But I always tell people, whatever you're doing, how do you want to do it?
Yeah.
There's a difference between a hustler and an entrepreneur. Mm. One, they're not, one is not bad and one is not good. They're both just two different sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. A hustler is very one-to-one transactional, hand-to-mouth kind of a thing, which can be great at the outset, but I always feel like if you want to do something, you should do it to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
If this is just something that you want to do to make an extra income, you know, there's nothing wrong with that either, but at the same time, you also have to do it right.
Yeah.
So in lieu of, well, let me just skimp on this or whatever, I think you should plan and budget to have it at a particular time, to be able to afford it at a particular time.
Yeah. I think that mentality, though, like, escapes a lot of, like, the millennials now. I feel like, you know, me, I mean, I'm an 83 baby. I looked at the charts. I'm not necessarily considered a millennial, but whatever. But I feel like a lot of the, like, the new entrepreneurs, like, or the kids who just, like, this is the first thing that, like, they've never actually had a real job. So entrepreneurism is their thing. I'm making candles in my basement. Mm-hmm. I'm making, you know, CDs in the basement. And so they're not really planning. They don't, I guess they don't know how to plan, and they're not really taking the steps, like you said, to really, like, what do I want my business to look like? And instead, I think a lot of individuals are just, I just need to be out there. Because mm-hmm. there's this mentality, like, as long as you're out there, the universe will make it work. But just put yourself out there. Don't worry about what you have and what you don't have. There's that mantra. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are getting caught in that until they come to you and say, hey, can you fix it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's one of the things that I love about these new age entrepreneurs, is that they're so bold and they're so brave, you know, but at the same time, everything in moderation.
Yeah, as a balance.
Yeah, you can't be scared and so, like, I have to do 20 million things before I get my business out, but you can't just be, like, balls to the wall, yeah. Let me, whatever, you know what I mean? But interestingly enough, so for those three people that I said on your dream team, mm-hmm. millennials offer a very interesting space in which to start and develop new businesses. Mm-hmm. So for me personally, my target demographic is millennials. And the way that they do business is different. Mm-hmm. It's very different. So being able to be accessible to millennials in particular is where sort of the roads coincide. Mm-hmm. Because a traditional attorney, unless you're meeting them during their office hours,
yeah.
unless you're paying a crazy retainer, they're not even going to speak to you. But for me, the way that I like to fashion my practice with respect to dealing with millennials and just people of this generation is I'm accessible. Mm-hmm. I'm accessible in different ways, you know, because for me, what I envision is my target demographic or my target client, let's say, is a young entrepreneur who's working from a beach in Thailand right
yeah.
now. They're not in an office. And they may be like, you know what? I just had this influx of cash because I just had a GoFundMe campaign. And
Jesus
now I'm ready
Christ.
To start this product. What do I do? Hey, like, I, you know, and I'm working on developing an app where, you know, you can communicate with me, you know.
Is that an According to RP exclusive? Yes. I'm all about exclusives on this show. You heard it here first, guys.
Yeah. I'm working on developing an app where it's like, sort of, you can just type in, hey, this is what I need.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you pay a fee. Everything can be done from your phone.
Yeah.
So you can be like, you know what? It's 3 a.m. I'm not going to answer you at 3 a.m. I'm not going to lie to you. But, hey, I'm working on this product line. What do you think about this? What are the legal implications of that? And then I'm able to just spit that right back to you at a time that's convenient for you, rather than you having to come to my office.
Yeah.
We have to sit down. And then, you know, it's all about meeting people where they're at.
Yeah. Okay. I like the exclusive. Guys, you heard it here first. You heard it here first. So I wanted to go back to something we had talked about offline a little bit. You know, just the the idea of just starting your own practice, you know, as an attorney of color, a Haitian woman at that, I find that, again, as a fellow attorney, you know, we have these ideas like, man, we would love to, like, start our own businesses. But I think some of us think of it from a different vantage point. We're like, well, we don't want to work for the man anymore. We want to create our own schedules. I want to come in at 11 o'clock if I want and work till, you know, 1 a.m. if I want. I don't want to have this dictator over me, so I kind of want to just do my own thing. But I feel like that's not really how it's, you know, how it is. I feel like life is really not as green on the other side.
I wouldn't say that. It's just a different shade of green.
Okay. So maybe a sea green, not a emerald.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I work 80 hours, so I don't have to work 40 for somebody else.
Okay.
So that's sort of what it's like. I mean, it's constant work. Mm-hmm. And I am a worse boss to myself than any other boss would be to me.
Okay.
So it's just the flip side of the coin, basically. Yes, it's great. You have autonomy. You have freedom. But with that comes the responsibility. Like, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And that's a very true statement. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first started my practice, I was so afraid to sign my name to things because it's just me. There's no firm to stand behind me. There's mm-hmm. no partner who could take the rap and then, like, fire me or whatever. It's just Melissa Bernier. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this. So I'm like, you know.
The hesitancy.
Yeah. You know, and then, but it's like when things are great, it's all me. Mm-hmm. I did this. When things are bad, yeah, that was me. It was me. I messed up. So it's great, but it's a lot of responsibility. And it requires a certain mindset that I don't necessarily think that people really think about and appreciate.
Okay.
Like I said, it's great. You have autonomy. If I'm going to wake up and work at noon, that's fine. But it's about setting discipline for yourself and whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. The best part about it is your discipline doesn't have to look like mine. You could be someone who works 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day and get your stuff done in the same amount of time, whereas I'm working from 12 to 10, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm consistent with it. So it's getting on your own schedule. It's finding what works for you. And I found that one of the hardest things for me in the beginning was, you know, you really want business to come in, right? Obviously, because your bills need to be paid and Sally Mae does not take air
no,
for payment.
They do not.
So it's all about the bottom line, but what are you willing to do for that bottom line? And I don't mean that in a crazy sense, like I'm stripping on the weekends and stuff like that. Although you can.
I prefer escorts.
And there's nothing wrong with that. No shade to anyone that does. But I'm saying, like, are you going to cut your prices for somebody? Mm-hmm. Are you going to let your clients run you, or do you run your clients? Like, what is your sort of code of conduct that you have for yourself? Okay. Like, I found that was something that was a hard thing to deal with because, again, someone comes through the door and you're just like, okay, not only do I want to help you, but, you know, I also want to be able to bring in business, but at what cost are you doing that?
Okay.
So it's important.
So now I know offline we had the conversation about, you know, the man versus clients and which one, like, who's really the boss here? Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of us who have these ideas of starting our own business, and it's going to be so great because we're working for ourselves, forget about the client demand and how that can maybe be much more, I don't know, overwhelming than any boss you could ever have.
Yeah, your client becomes your boss. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like I said before, one of the more rewarding things about, you know, having my own practice is that I directly work with clients. And so I'm able to impact them and help them in a very direct way that I can see. But it entails so much more than just, hey, I need this contract, or hey, I have this issue. Mm-hmm. You become their therapist sometimes. You know, again, going back to this code of conduct thing, how do you communicate with your clients? Do you mm-hmm. let them text you? Do you let them call you at 3 a.m.? I mean, I work with a lot of artists, and their hours are not my hours. Mm-hmm. So they want to have a conference call at 2 a.m., and I'm just like, no. Do I want to? Or is it that important? Or, you know, so clients can be very demanding. And just think about when you've had a problem and you've sought a professional to help you, how you feel vulnerable in a sense because you're letting this person into your private business, especially if it's like a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant. How you feel like, you know, you're putting all your eggs in one basket mm-hmm. because this person is supposed to help you. Are they helping you? You may be scared. You may be, you know, nervous. Sometimes you're helping clients with some of the biggest problems that they're facing. Mm-hmm. And that requires a certain amount of empathy that some people don't have. Mm-hmm. It requires a certain level of understanding and compassion, but it also requires a level of discipline and sternness also. So it's learning to deal with people has honestly been one of the more challenging things because it, you know, if you work in a large firm, a lot of times you may not be interfacing with clients like mm-hmm. that. It may be through email, it may be through phone call, but to have someone come to your desk and sit and cry and tell you their whole story about how they had this great product line and they didn't trademark it, now someone else has it, and now they're being sued for trademark infringement and they don't know what to do. You know, these things are really, you know, they're really important. So it can be a lot. Clients can be a lot. In a good way and sometimes in a not so good way.
So I think it's, you know, what I'm getting from all of that is, you know, one, I think planning, again, is important there. Understanding your temperament, who you are, what you know and what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and being a little risk averse, I think, is helpful in that. So you can't necessarily be so like, I'm just going to go out there and, you know, I'm just going to open up my own practice and that's that. There's so much involved with that. And I think the client end is really important because if you don't make them happy, if you're, you know, screwing or not, even if you're not screwing around with them, because a lot of times clients have these expectations of what you need to deliver. It's like, that was not in the contract.
Not just that. Sometimes they misinterpret how mm-hmm. the law works.
Yeah.
I mean, clients can be very emotion driven. So it's up to you to sort of dispel those emotions mm-hmm. and be like, okay, I understand how you're feeling, but this is what we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. This is option A, this is option B, or this is, you know, managing expectations is one of the biggest sort of percentages of what you do mm-hmm. as, you know, a solo practitioner.
I see. So I feel like we've gained a lot of knowledge from you today and an exclusive.
I'm glad I could impart such knowledge.
No, definitely. Yeah. And I think it's really important because a lot of the listeners are in that, like that group of I'm starting my own business or I'm thinking about starting my own business. And, you know, people are always trying to ask me, you know, who does copyright? Who does trademark? Who does this? Who does that? So I think it's really good that we're able to have you on to explain a little bit about what you do and people can kind of get a sense of your personality too. Hopefully that business will come in.
Yes, please.
So tell us, how can we get in contact with you?
The best way is through my website. It's www.bernierlegal.com. You can schedule a consultation. You can find out what we do, our practice areas. Check out our blog also, which is brooklynlegal.nyc.
I know Brooklyn Legal.
Yeah, I like to mix, because the thing is, law can be very stuffy. Mm-hmm. So I like to mix it with lifestyle stuff. Mm-hmm. So some of your latest gossip and how that affects people, some fashion stuff, entertainment. It's a really good read.
Yeah.
But yeah, website. And you can contact us there. Check us out on social media at Bernier Legal for some informative articles, some great pictures, some nice motivational quotes, especially on Mondays. Yes. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. And so for those who might not know exactly how to spell Bernier, how do we spell it?
Yeah. B as in boy, E-R, N as in Nancy, I-E-R, legal.
All right, great. So thank you so much, Melissa, for gracing us with your presence. I definitely think we will have you back on to talk about this. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that I want to talk about, especially with this entrepreneurial thing. Mm-hmm. And since you're into the business law, I think people will have a lot of questions. So as I get the questions rolling in, I will create another segment.
Great. I'm
for
here
you
for
to
it.
Come on. But thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
All right, guys. This is a wrap for this episode. Again, we were very, very happy to have Melissa here to talk to you guys today. And it's a wrap for this show. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all on.